So, hello, Mr. Rick. Welcome to the Nossisode.
The Nossisode.
Yeah, the Nossisode. It's a special edition.
Hi, I'm Steve Rick.
And I'm Tim Elliott.
And welcome to the RE of Marketing podcast.
A podcast where we rethink, replay and remark on all good things to do with branding and marketing. So people are going to wonder about this time, I imagine, what the flipping heck a Nossisode is, right? Well, we had an idea, didn't we, after season two, of how do we do season three? And we thought we've had some guests and we've done some of our own stuff, but we wanted to kind of take it up a level. So we've invited some of our favourite, most intelligent, best-looking guests back for season three as co-hosts, right? So not only do they have to answer our ridiculous questions, they get to also take over a little bit. And the first one of those is Mr. Steve Noss. Mr. Steve Noss, say hello.
Hey, hi, guys. Wow, what an intro. What an intro. Having a Nossisode. Oh, I'm loving that.
You even put a Steve Bright in the afternoon clap as well.
Yeah.
Like a massive, yeah.
We can edit that in a clap, I think, can't we? Mr. Steve Noss, say hello.
Yeah, I like it.
But that, yeah, well, welcome back, Steve, and thank you for accepting to come back, because you're our first welcome back ever.
Well, thanks for the welcome back. I'm not sure I tick any of the criteria you mentioned earlier about, you know, who you've invited back, but it's lovely to be back here anyway.
Well, you're top of the list or first. You can take either one of those.
Yeah, the first one who responded.
Whichever one is great. So today, Steve, actually, just before we start, why don't you, in case people haven't caught season two yet, because we're getting new listeners every day, give them a quick overview of who you are and what you do for the, like, the day job.
Okay, the daily job. I like the way you express that. My title, for what it's worth, is I'm head of creative at a business called Cooper Parry. And to all intents and purposes, that's a business that used to be known as accountants. But we're kind of business advisors. And I'd like to think that even though Cooper Parry has been a business for 170 odd years, I still think our reputation is one of rebellion and disruption. And the very fact that a firm of accountants, if you like, has a head of creative says speaks volumes for me. Not many of those about. My journey to arriving as head of creative at Cooper Parry has also been an interesting one, I suppose. I've been a client of Cooper Parry's from when I had my own agency, Like-Minded. I've been a supplier to them as, you know, as an agency in terms of creative and design and copywriting. And most latterly, the last two and a bit years, I've been inside the business. So I've kind of seen it from three different dimensions. I didn't think I was employable when I actually went into the field of work at Cooper Parry a couple of years ago. But I have to say, it's surpassed my expectations. I absolutely love it. Notwithstanding, this last year's been very strange. You know, I'm really enjoying the experience.
Yeah, I am. It's a good segue into today's rough topic. I think that thinking you're not employable. I've attempted and been swayed to plug into a few organizations over the last few years, and they've gone, actually. Not quite the right fit. It's not enough freedom to do. But that's, you know, Cooper Parry is a different beast. We will put all the normal links and the links to the last episode where we discussed Cooper Parry, and even actually your creative mornings talk that you did for us, I think, is a good background into that as well, for people to do. Today, I think we're talking roughly about employee experience, right? Which you experienced firsthand.
Yeah, and I tell you what, it's being redefined literally by the day at the moment. You know, in terms of what that means. You know, just before we came onto this on air, as it were, we were having a chat. And so much of these chats are a kind of an extended version of, you know, an employer-employee experience. What is it like in the workplace? What is the workplace, for God's sake, you know, nowadays? And certainly, you know, a year ago when this all began to kick off, we were talking about, well, for sure, the workplace will never be the same again. Kind of, that has become a well-worn cliche already. But it is a fact that the workplace that we experienced 12 months ago will never be the same. You know, businesses will never operate in the same way, and it won't just be around cost savings. It won't just be around improved technology. It will be around, you know, how can we, you know, get an experience back together where people interact but don't necessarily have to spend all of their time together in one room or a series of rooms. And that's going to be a massive challenge, and different businesses work it out in different ways. I mean, very personally, you know, speaking, I can't wait to get back to interaction with people on face-to-face. You know, with the best will in the world, you know, looking at a screen for, you know, these long periods of time is having a draining effect, no question. And I think anybody, you know, that particularly in the creative, you know, world, feeds off others. You know, I know I do. You know, I'm a sponge, and I want to see and experience as much as I possibly can. And so when those options are more limited, and when you have less kind of, you know, coffee chats and water cooler chats, I think we are all the worse for it. That's my personal view. And somehow we need to get that back. You know, I'm loving doing this because it's a different kind of interaction. But it's not quite the same as, you know, bumping into somebody you haven't seen a while in a corridor, and just that informal, spontaneous conversation that you can have like that.
Yeah, I think spontaneity and... what's the other? There's another word, serendipity, I've heard as well, right? Those two words are things that, I don't know, like I've run a few teams and organisations and stuff, but I'm not sure spontaneity and serendipity were in my leadership to-do list, right? For whatever, like, it's not something we valued in the process or creating the system of effective work, blah, 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 right? Or in reflective employee experience. But now it's the stuff, it's the things that people miss, right?
Yeah, and it goes back to that thing, you know, you don't know how important some things are, how much you value certain things until they're taken away from you. And I think we're all learning that. We're learning to redefine what is important to us at lots of levels. I'm not just talking about the workplace. I'm talking about all kind of relationships and the stuff we love and the stuff we don't love so much. And that has all been redefined. I mean, I think the really interesting thing, Tim, about what you said there about spontaneity and serendipity, and the challenge with that is the very nature of it is you can't kind of teach that. You can't force it. You can't try to create situations where you have spontaneity. It kind of either does or doesn't happen.
You can't strategize it.
Yeah.
It's not like rhubarb. You can't just force it somewhere and make it scream.
No. But I think there's a topic that me and you discussed Steve Rick. Oh, I've got two Steves again on the podcast, yeah. Listeners, so this may get...
We are taking over the world.
Yeah. Coronavirus is going to change its name to Steve as well soon.
Yeah. I've got a Steve mask. Anyway, let's not go down that road. Right, there'll be... like, we were talking, weren't we, about... In one of the earlier episodes about, like, the role of work and identity of self, like, because, you know, when we used to go out to work, like, say we had a 9-to-5, you'd probably have to leave at 8 if you were in a feasible distance. Most people left, I left certainly earlier than that, but, you know, it was a, you know, 89, like, I'm not very good at maths. I don't work at the accountant's firm, but like 80% of your day was spent work mode and 20% otherwise, right? So it becomes a massive part of your identity, having that, right? And that work family and those work friends and that, you know, accountability. And it's like a different role you play, but we haven't got that now. I mean, we still do the job, right? We still do the work, but...
I think I've seen more of my wife in the last year than I have done in 10 years previous.
I definitely have.
She worked 5 days a week. So her closest relations, realistically, were her work colleagues, who she sat to every day, who, and it comes back to that point you was making around serendipity, where a conversation was happening that you just happened to be listening to, or you eavesdropped on, or that it's completely changed around. And, you know, I'm very... grateful that I get to see her more. She really dislikes it. She really dislikes it. But that's fine. We will get...
Obviously, I think.
You know, there's going to be a lot of solicitors involved. There's going to be a lot of mediation. Somebody's going to be making a lot of money from it. But because everything changed around, it's just changed the way that you've got to approach things. And it is something that I want to ask both of you, actually. You know, and do you think, because we haven't had those opportune moments to, you know, sit next to somebody and overlisten and eavesdrop and hear those extended conversations, do you think that us as people have actually developed less in the last year than we would have done if we was in a workplace environment?
Good question. My simple answer and straightforward answer would be yes. I think we have developed less. I think we've kind of internalized a lot of our thought processes. And we've defaulted to a lot of, you know, known, if you like, techniques, even if they're subconscious. Whereas, you know, I know for a fact that, you know, you have a conversation. Somebody says something and you think, it's not quite right, but there's something in that that I'd never even thought about. And yet that's worth exploring. Now, I wouldn't have come up with that original thought. And that wasn't necessarily where it will end up. But it's taken me into a different place that I certainly wouldn't have had. Well, I'm less likely to have had if I'd internalized that whole process myself. You know, kind of feeding off the sounding board that is yourself is an echo by the very nature of it. So having people, you know, and people challenging you, you know, people saying, yeah, I'm not sure. And you know, actually, it's a cul-de-sac. So you turn around and you go somewhere else. And you can do that quickly when you're amongst a group of people. You might arrive at the same same destination on your own, but it's going to take you longer, you know, because there's not somebody to say, no, I'm not sure about that. There's not somebody else that might say, yeah, I like that. But I tell you what, if you did that as well, that, wow, now it's really flying. And it's that sort of interaction that, you know, I crave and I miss, and, you know, we will get back, but I certainly miss it.
Yeah. I think you that and what you said earlier, Steve, was really interesting about the creative process, right? And that you've just described is that, even though it's not super structured, it's that feeding off others, right? It's that cognitive diversity of the group. Like, that just happens because there's a group and the different people. Whereas in this office that I'm in, there's nobody else here. It's just me. I know you guys are technically here, but it's not, do you know what? We don't sit with the camera on for 8 hours a day going, what about this thing? We just try and figure it out on your own. don't you? Which make
yeah, and our reference points are very different. So for example, you know, there's all the different references, all the different influences that other people can bring, you know, cultural, gender, you know, all such a rich mix that it's impossible to bring that yourself to the table every time. You can be aware of it and you can be conscious of this. But, you know, when somebody else is there just saying, you know, something spontaneously and they go, that is so right. You know, that is spot on. Yeah, and I do miss that. But kind of taking that thought then, you know, maybe a question for you guys is, do you think let's accept we are where we are and things are going to change, but do you think that we've also there's been some positive learnings from this whole experience that we should embrace going forward, rather than kind of just pretend it never all happened and try to get back to where we were?
I think there's a flip side to every coin, right? I'm that glass half full guy anyway, and I think there's a you know, an opportunity on the other side, on the other side of every problem, right, or every friction point. And I think change is always good. I'm a big fan of like continual development or continual improvement, and like across the board, as you know, processes, systems, personally, whatever. I think there's been kind of more freedom, like a more freedom or more freedom of choice to do that, because the systems and the processes and how I work and when I work and where I work and how I do it isn't constrained by what I thought work was. Now it's like my choice. Do you know what I mean? It's my job. My job is to deliver the thing I said I would deliver, or I've been asked to deliver, like all the other stuff, right? I don't have to have 3 team meetings to get it done. I don't have to, do you know what I mean? I don't have to drive into office. There's been some barriers removed in every process, right? And because you're not in the office for 8 hours a day, when you have an hour Zoom meeting about that project, this could be bad and good, but you get to the point, right? Because you don't want to be on Zoom for 4 hours. Because it's tiring, right? Your eyes hurt. The focus isn't as good, right? You need to do bite-sized chunks of this and then work separately, right? So you work together alone a lot more. And I think that's I would say that's a positive, because you get to use that more, like do it more as you would do it. Be less constrained by other people's constraints, if you know what I mean. I like the work together alone thing.
Yeah.
As long as you're able, like you mentioned in the first episode, internal comms is super important for you guys at Cooper Parry. As long as the communication's amazing, right? And it has to be super powered to make that effective. But that's what I'd kind of take away.
I'm in agreement with you, and I think you use a really important word there, Tim, which is choice. And I think at the moment, when we stand back from this in 2 or 3 years' time, we'll realise we went from one polar opposite to another polar opposite. So from being forced to be in a place between 8 and 5, or, you know, when you've got your routine in place and you go to the gym beforehand and you pick up dinner on the way home and you're out the house for 12 hours is one upper polar. But then we went, right, now you can't go out your house. And that's a complete polar opposite of something that you had before. Routine's gone, environment's gone, relationships have gone, all these different things. What I think can be really good and can come of this is you shouldn't be in either of the polar opposites. There's got to be a blended middle. And it's that point of a company. So Salesforce last week announced they're closing all their offices down, as have others as well. What they're actually doing is going, we're giving you choice, but we're not giving you a lot of choice because you've got to work from home now. Whereas actually some people do need to go into the office, and you've got to have that middle ground. So downsizing offices, I understand. Getting rid, I'm not 100% sure of yet.
Yeah, I agree. I love the notion that around the choice. I mean, obviously, some sectors, the choice aspect is harder. If you've got a manufacturing line, you know, you do need a certain number of people to be in a certain place at a certain time. But actually, you know, for example, in the marketing, in the creative sector, absolutely, you know, we should learn so much from this that, as you say, Steve, that it shouldn't be polar opposites ever again. The balance will be different for different people, but there will be a balance, you know. So I can never imagine going back to the office full time again. I genuinely can't. But I can imagine, and I want to go back for a certain period of time, you know, for a half day here, a day there, or whatever. But just kind of that I suppose it picks up on your point about the choice. You know, I feel empowered that I can do that now, as opposed to having kind of an expectation or even a kind of pseudo pressure to be there and at a certain time for a certain length of time.
I'm doing some work for a big American facilities management department. I've got like 1,200 leaders, right, at the University of Virginia, right? It's massive, like it's like a city, one of our cities, right? It's different. But they've got 1,200 leaders, right? And they're having issues with their vision, like alignment with the vision, with all of it. They've got 1,200 leaders. So the staff, I think, is near on 800,000 or 900,000 people, like everybody, right? So they're having, obviously, like difficult aligning around the vision and how their job descriptions now fit. Because just like you said, some of those people are what they call stewards, or they'll be cleaners here, right? They have to be in the medical center, cleaning the medical center, because it's bloody important. Whereas some people have been working from home for a year and a half, right? So both sides of that same team, right? They're the same team fulfilling the same vision, in theory, are like polar opposites, right? But it's trying to find, we've been trying to design communications and a vision around finding a balance that works for everybody, that no matter what to-do lists are in your job description, the stuff that, you know, that old analogy that the cleaner in NASA says he's there to put a man on the moon, right? That feeling is still there, but trying to find a balance for that, I think in every organization is super tricky now, right?
Yeah, I think it is really tricky. And you know, the danger is that everything becomes a little bit of a compromise, and everything is slightly fudged, so nobody is really happy, you know, with the outcome. But I suppose the reality is that, you know, most workplaces, if you again go back, rewind, was anybody really ever very happy with the situation before? So this opportunity we have is something that we really do need to embrace. And it's, you know, the very fact that you're doing that kind of work, Tim, is indicative of the challenges that businesses are going to have going forward. And some of them are going to be about physical presence, for sure. And some of the other aspects are going to be more around, you know, mental well-being and technology and everything else. And it's going to be a pretty rich mix, but and it will be challenging, but at least challenging is going to be done, I would hope anyway.
The thing that it's making us ask real questions now, isn't it? Whereas before in an office environment, for example, if the workforce morale was low, you know, stick a slide in or get a ping pong table, or let's put a bar in the corner. And it was very easy to
the Wednesdays, right?
Yeah, it was very easy to try and buy yourself out of it. Whereas now it's, people are going, it's not about that anymore. It's more on that emotional and that feeling of wanting to be part of something. That's what I'm taking away from what you two guys have just been talking about. I mean, I couldn't imagine trying to get 9,000 people to go towards one vision. What you're trying to do is create a small football club, realistically.
Yeah.
And the only way to do that is to make, you know, is to get them into the Premier League and to make them all follow that vision of we're going to have Steven Gerrard playing for us in 2 years' time. It's
yeah, and keep getting results.
Keep getting results. But what is the end goal? That's the vision that you're trying to get to. Is it to win? You've got to win. That's the only thing that people can align to, surely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it, right? The model we're using is like orbiting or pocket cultures, right? So there's a core culture of the whole department, like to provide good service to our customer, like something super generic that everybody could go, yeah, all right. I can get behind that core vision. But then their pocket culture, say their team of facilities management who look after the medical research building, right? Which is a whole different job than a groundsman, like yeah. A whole different job.
Yeah.
Like is and they've got their own utilities company, right? There's loads of different teams, right? They were like, well, we can't, because they are feeling trying to do this job to this vision is unfair to them because it makes them have more trade-offs to do their job than other people, right? So we've developed a pocket culture that orbit the main culture that still feels like they're working towards the big goal, but it's theirs, right? They've got ownership of it because it's their job.
Yeah.
Right? As long as they're, I mean, we've used it before, Steve, in our customer journey stuff, that freedom within the framework, right? They've gone, here's the framework, but it's your job. You've got to deliver this thing. We trust you to do it.
Yeah.
You create a culture within your team because you're not interacting with the other 24 teams. You're not interacting with each other in some cases. Right, you guys decide, you 15 people, you 100 people decide what's the right culture, the right job description, the right system, the right map, to whatever you want to call it, right, to follow. But it's like their job description, their reason to work, their delivery to the company vision, their relationship with what work is and the company who employs them, pays them money, right, is like massively, it's up to them, kind of.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things as we're talking about this that kind of occurs to me is that, you know, we're framing this in the context of a working environment. And what's really clear that's so important about a working environment is the social environment. Yeah. And, you know, the notion of, you know, just that it sounds such an alien concept already, you know, that at the end of a day you might say, oh, do you fancy a quick pint?
Yes.
And, you know, that the ability to do that, and, you know, that's an extension of work. You know, you'll be with a colleague, but the environment will be different. You know, you'll be maybe more relaxed, you'll be maybe, you know, but that social connection. We've lost for the last 12 months, and, you know, there are some fantastic, don't get me wrong, fantastic online activities, and people are doing some great, great things in that space. But ultimately, it's not the same as a kind of taking a more holistic view of what work is. You know, people shouldn't feel like I'm going to work to work. You know, there should be an element of I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm going to be people I like being around. And as a result, I'm going to do great work. I'm going to do better work. If you can create that kind of environment that isn't just about what you do between, you know, the traditional 9 to 5, then that's got to be a good thing for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially on that social side, even if people didn't go out for a drink after work and stuff, just the things like, you know, I'm just sitting here now going, I didn't have a Christmas party this year.
Yeah.
You know, which is really alien, because ever since the day you went into work, there was some form of Christmas party. If that was when I was in the trade, it used to be down in the pub by 2 o'clock on, you know, the day before Christmas Eve. And then you would drink all the way through the night in your tradesman's clothes and end up in a nightclub covered in paint still. But I've had one of those since I was 16. you know, and to not have that this year, that's quite alien. I've not really sat back and thought about that.
Yeah. And that's also, you know, in terms of in interaction within a business. And your point, Tim, about, you know, the groundsman and the astrophysicist or whatever. But actually, if there was some social event, those two people may well have interacted and found actually they've got a different connection. It may not be anything to do with work. You know, they may both follow the same, you know, American football team, or they may have the same love of a genre of music. Whatever it is, there'll be a connection so that when they next see them, they'll go, hey, have you heard this? Or did you see that? You know, and that kind of that serendipity stuff that we referred to earlier, you can't create that online. It's so difficult to create in this environment. That would be a hell of a Zoom call, wouldn't it, Tim? If you know with 9,000 people, everybody trying to put their hand up.
Have you taken any new in over this last year, Steve?
Or is, yeah, yeah.
How has that been? You know, is it?
Well,
is that...
I mean, obviously, I'm not the person that's been onboarded, but I can only imagine it's pretty hard.
Yeah.
You know, we've done some great things and we've done what we can, but ultimately there are some people in the business that have not actually physically met anybody since they've been taken on. I mean, it just the whole notion of that is kind of weird. You know, at some extent, you know, there's an interview process and that sort of thing. But, you know, people coming to see the offices, for example, you know, just forget it. So, in answer to your question, yes, we have taken on people quite a lot. I think over 80 in this period, which is pretty extraordinary.
Yeah.
And some of them have had, you know, had the ability when we kind of eased out of lockdown 1, 2, whatever it was, you know, they had a kind of an insight, a kind of the window open for a brief period of time, and then it, you know, slammed shut again. But there are some that have not had, not had any conventional kind of introduction to the team or to the business as such. So, but we have managed it, and hopefully, you know, it's gone okay.
Yeah.
Tricky though.
Really tricky. I mean, I actually started working with a company in September, on PAYE, and I think I've met one person in like a travel lodge car park for 10 minutes, but the rest of the time it's been by Zoom, in honesty, or by Teams. And it's, you know, they're quite a traditional organization. They want some digital transformation, that type of thing. And they're being forced to having to do it at the same time. So it's hard for organizations. It's hard for people to feel part of something new.
It's interesting though. You used the choice of words there, and you said they're being forced to do it. And I suppose that the difference is that, you know, at some point there needs to be acknowledgement that this is, you know, this is it. You know, things have changed. You know, I can understand that when this all kicked off, there was a period of time where people said, well, yeah, but it's not going to last. It, you know, within months or whatever, we'll forget about this. We'll have a laugh about it. And the kind of idea that people are being forced to change is kind of interesting, because in a way, yes, they are being forced, but they should be being more receptive to, hold on, we've got to admit we have to change, because otherwise we're going to be, you know, a serious dinosaur player in whatever market we're in. And whether that is forced on them or they kind of go, well, okay, we're going to have to change, but how do we change? In what way do we change? And what do we want to become? That's where the real questioning needs to be, you know, rather than, well, we're going to have to end up doing it this way because everybody else has. There is an opportunity to kind of challenge and say, well, can we do it a different way, or what's going to work for us?
I think, you know, when I use the word force, everybody has been given this speed up option, haven't they? Which is what's happened realistically. And everybody would have got there eventually. But now it's, when I say the force, it's the force on timings more than anything else.
Yeah.
Everybody would have had to have done it, otherwise they'd have disappeared. But it's not a case of, you know, oh, I'm choosing to do this. It's a case of I'm having to do this. And I think that's two different mental states for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get that. As in you're having to do it now, as opposed to I'm
ready. So
it's like a massive accelerant.
Yeah.
Everything has been, you know, turbocharged and, you know.
That's it. In the digital landscape, it is like somebody's just poured petrol on something and it's just gone woof straight away. Yeah. And it's burning a building down for a lot of people. And it's quite hard for a lot of people to come to grips with that when they've had successful companies for 30, 50, 100 years in doing what they've always done.
Yeah.
They now have to change that approach. It's a big ask for a lot of people.
I've had an interesting, I don't know, change in perspective, I suppose. So I'm kind of doing the work I've always done, right, the type of work. But before I would go in, like before lockdown, I would go in and work with an organisation, right, with a team of people and go, right, as an organisation, who are you? What do you believe? What's your personality as an organisation? But now, which is great, right? And it's done good work for that period of time, right? It's been effective. The clients are happy and stuff like that. But now the change work I'm doing is changing people on an individual level and teaching, like seeing, because an organization is just, it's even more so than it's ever been, a sum of its parts now, right? So the change work or the transformation work or the communications design work, the brand work I'm doing now is individual people as a group again, but that we're working on changing the individual because they're in charge, right? They have, again, the choice or have been pointed in this direction. And now they're the front line. So it's like the change of organizations have to be made person by person. You can't bring in a whole new system because everybody's in the office for 40 hours every week. So we can have one training session on Tuesday morning and then the new system's in, right? Like it's going, hey, Dave, we've got this thing. We need to, like, how do you feel about it? What's your problem? And can you?
But that should have happened originally. This is where somebody's got it wrong. They got people in a room for half an hour on a Tuesday morning and said, we're doing this now.
But it's that, yeah. If it wasn't broke, don't fix it, right? That you alluded to a second ago, Steve, with your organization. It was a successful organization. If it's not broke, don't fix it. But that's.
It is a successful organisation, but there's still things that, you know, you can't take it. It's gone past a certain point now where it's just not a blip in time.
Yeah.
That's what's happened over the last year. It's now something a lot bigger. And I think when we first started doing this podcast in season one, Tim, we alluded to that. We were going, there is something in the air with this where it's going to change things for a long time and it's going to permeate through every part of business and through every part of marketing and in every walk of life, it will change something. And it's starting to become a realization now because it has been a year.
Yeah. And I think there's also a sense that because this is a global thing.
Yeah.
It literally everybody is, you know, different, played out in different ways and so on. And, you know, I watch quite a lot of sport. I love my sport. And, you know, I'll watch some sport in Australia and I'll think, wow, they've got a crowd of 30,000. Nobody's wearing a mask, et cetera, et cetera. And frustratingly, we can't do anything like that. But ultimately, it is global. And so I think, you know, some of the big drivers around technology have been so accelerated because it's not just, you know, one little island doing it, having to cope, or one community that's quite isolated. It's the whole goddamn thing.
Yeah.
And that's why probably it has been so accelerated over such a short period of time.
Yeah.
But we can use it. We can use technology well, though, can't we, Steve, for employee experience? You know, we can utilise it to actually make it a better employee experience.
Absolutely, we can. And one of the interesting things, I've always been a big believer in, you know, kind of short, sharp meetings, for example, but, you know, before Teams was a thing and Zoom and so on. And to me, that's even more so when we're having to use technology. So it's that point about let's accept we're spending a lot of time in front of a screen, okay? So how much of that time is valuable? How can we maximize the time that we spend with each other on a screen rather than, okay, we'll put in a couple of hours and see where it goes? Actually, if you were in a room and you, after half an hour, you say, I think we're probably done, don't you? Yeah, okay. But there's something about technology at the moment. Well, yeah, but we've got a two-hour slot. Well, let's just call it a day after 30 minutes because we've smashed it. That actually is hard. It is harder to do because everybody's lives are very, very segmented right now. Mm. You know, I've never been so calendar driven as I have been in this last year. You know, the kind of, yeah, well, but we get together this afternoon. Yeah, cool. You just let me know when it suits you. Now it has to be, well, I'll pop something in the calendar. Let's put in a half hour slot at 3:30. Is that good? Yeah, okay. So the whole experience is changing. I'm really interested in what you're saying, though, about, you know, having to almost micro manage it down to the individual and kind of provide solutions that are individually driven rather than collectively, because that will be challenging, you know, and it also does put more onus back on. If the culture is right anywhere, those kind of scenarios will just, well, not naturally, but are more likely to play out naturally. There's going to be a way that works. Where the culture is maybe kind of a bit looser, and people are not really all in, you know, fully embracing of that culture, that's when I think businesses will find it very tough. You know, because they are actually having to say, so what are we about? What are we all about? What is our purpose anymore? Is this about, you know, just the bottom line, or is there a bigger picture that we need to be striving for? I think businesses are going to be asking bigger questions for sure.
I think I was going to ask about employer branding, but this might lead on to that. It's that element of, you know, the, I don't know what you call it actually, but the thing where people pull together in a crisis, right? That pulling together of people, you go, okay, we're a bit under the cosh, right? We're in the poop. Let's knuckle down and do that. That behavior, right, isn't in job descriptions, right? It's not, again, it's not a system, a process, a thing you can strategize. That's the relationship bit that you alluded to before, Steve, about, you know, the stuff you make in the pub after work for an hour, the extended lunch you may have on a Friday, right? The little, it's the human bit, right? Not the work bit. Like the work, you know, doing the task your job tells you to do is, you know, it's not 8 hours, 5 days a week of work, right? There's work is, like you said, the other stuff, but I think it's that pulling together. It's the glue, it's the glue for culture. I don't know where I'm going with this sentence, but it's that pulling together is the thing I wanted to get out, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the sense of, I don't know, it's this kind of siege mentality, where it, you know, but the flip of the siege mentality is if you like, kind of, we're all in it together. Yeah. And if that actually, you know, the sense that this is something that's going to impact on all of us, what can we do collectively to make it better for everyone? Well, let's try and do that. That's a no-brainer. It's not necessarily that easy to do, but it should be, you know, we should all aspire to try to do that. You know, how can we, you know, the kind of, okay, this is shit. You know, everyone's fed up with it. So what can we do to make it slightly better? And there may be some short-term solutions, some longer-term solutions, but things that can just make a difference. If everybody feels that they're part of that process, that's another big factor. You know, the kind of sense that if these are impositions on individuals, they're much harder to take. You know, I know personally, I don't like anybody telling me to do something. So, you know, I'll arrive at that conclusion. I say, you know, when you mentioned that, that's a damn good idea. I'm going to do that. But I like to come to my own kind of conclusion about that. So the more people that are part of that process and feel part of that process, the much easier it will land, the better it will land, I should say. You know, because people feel that they've played a role in it, in the kind of the development of the ways of working.
Yeah. How do you communicate that or put that over in like, because you've hired like 80 odd people, how do you put that over in employer branding, in what the employer experience is? You know, what role they're expected to play in an employee experience. How do you, like, because that it's, I understand exactly what you mean, but it's hard
to bring across that, isn't it? Because it comes in every touch point.
Yeah, it does.
It's something that you've got, it's a value that you live. It's not something you can tell people to have. So when you were talking just then, the first thing that jumped to mind was that brothers in arms scenario that you were discussing. Look how the army do it. They tell people what to do, but every soldier would never leave a man behind. And it's that sort of mentality, and there are different ways to get to it, but they live by every value of what the army is trying to achieve. And it's the same in that team mentality, that whole SWAT team where they come together to get things done and then go on to the next problem and solve things. But you can't tell people to do that. You just can't. It doesn't work that way.
No, and I think there's some really interesting strands here, and one of particularly of interest to me is this kind of notion that if you empower individuals, they think for themselves and they kind of work out the solution themselves rather than having to, you know, ideally you lead them to the water, but thereafter if they want to drink, they'll drink. If not, you have to maybe lead them to a different watering hole. I think in terms of the touch points, that is so true. It should run through everything you do as a business. So from, you know, the onboarding process, it's not a formal letter arrives. It might be something that, you know, turns up on the doorstep unexpected from the business that says, you know, welcome on board. This is a weird time, but, you know, enjoy this on us. And when we can get back and meet together, we will, and we'll do it properly, kind of thing. But it's also, you know, we every month as a business, we have something called a holler, and it's a kind of shout out, and different people in the business will say different things. And it's usually, you know, led by the CEO aide, but others take, you know, will play a part in it. It's an hour long. And, you know, there's no obligation to view it or to turn up and watch it. But it's incredible how many people do, because it gives them, a cultural insight to what's going on in the business. We're very open. We're very honest and transparent about, you know, the way the business is performing, the way, you know. So throughout this whole process, we've communicated the health of the business has been as important as the health of the people. Two things were absolutely one and the same. You know, we have to report those, and it's still the case. You know, it's still important. Are we all okay? You know, is everybody okay? And is the business okay? Yes. Let's move on. What else should we talk about? It's also one of those things, you know, it's trying to remember to celebrate the good stuff, because there's so much negative swirling around everything that it can be, you know, all pervasive. I'm like you, Tim. My glass is always half full, and we should try to celebrate in whatever ways we can. And some of those are just little acknowledgements, individual one-to-one shout outs and high fives to individuals saying, tell you what you did just then was brilliant, loved it. And that work you did last month on that project smashed it. It's little things that can make a huge difference. And we should always try to do that, even when we get back to some kind of other balance that we referred to earlier.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, you know, one of the morals so far is that balance piece, right? Whatever balance means within your a life as a worker and as an organization, it's very much a part of that, I would say. As we're coming in, I suppose the final furlongs, right, of the podcast. Is there anything our esteemed first co-host wants to bring up?
love the choice of word esteemed. And when you said we were coming into the last furlong, I thought you meant a pandemic, but
no,
you
know, no, I'm not in I'm control. Going, oh, of that.
I love your optimism, Tim. I'm loving that. Loving. But in terms of, you know, what so for me, one of the things that I intrigues me is that when we first had our chat, however many months ago that was, how much has changed even in that period of time. You know, we thought kind of then we kind of got a handle on everything. Little did we know we had a handle on nothing whatsoever, and I can imagine, you know, if we repeat this process hopefully soon, we'll say the same thing again. You know, this is going to be a huge learning curve, but it is what it is, and we have to try to kind of make the most of it and you know, suck out what we can that's positive from it. So for you guys, I suppose, well, one question I would like to ask is what has been, you know, the lasting legacy, for example, of the last 12 months for you? What has been the biggest impact on both of you, do you think?
Go on, Steve, you do it.
The biggest lasting legacy of the last 12 months for me is I've work's important, but it's not as important as everything else. And it really made me realise that. And I know there's a lot of people saying this type of thing, but I went through a really tough time in the January of 29. What are we now? 2021. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. January 2020, I went through a really tough time for about 5 or 6 weeks. Took a mental hit, went back for 5 or 6 weeks. And then I decided, that, you know what, things aren't right. So that's it. I'm going to take some time out. And I took out the first until September. I took out until September, so it was about six seven months. And in those 6 7 months, the first lockdown came, the second lockdown came, the pandemic hit. But you know what, I was at home in our new house that we'd moved into the year before with my two daughters who were off school. I was helping homeschool. I've got 10 times better at cooking. All those things that always were pushed to the side because the teacher that, or you know, work I couldn't get, so you're gonna have to go to after school club because that's where you've got to go, so I can't get there in time, that all disappeared. And I'm very fortunate that I got to review what happened in life to me in a time when a lot of the world were being asked to review themselves. I'd already started that process. So yeah, I think the whole thing of work's really important. I need work, otherwise actually I go stir crazy. But at the same time, I realized that it's about integrating it into the life that I want rather than it being something that drives the life that I want.
Yeah, I get that. Completely get that. Mm. How about you, Tim?
Similar, actually, I think, or at least the same ballpark. It's been a transformational year for me. Like I was, you know, similar to Steve. I used to get up at 6 a.m. I used to go to the gym. I go to work from the gym, and after work I go like for beers with the team, or we'd have a leadership meeting or networking or an event or something. I get back late, and then I the only interaction I had with my house that I'd lived in for 11 years was I kept my stuff here and I slept here.
Hell of Tim.
I did, right? This is it. Even at the weekends as a family, we went out places, we did stuff. Like, this was just like a storage unit. Like a nice one, but a storage unit. But like and that change in perspective of work with my identity and answering who am I actually without that whole identity of that guy? Because that guy is not here now. Do you know what I mean? In theory, I do the same stuff for money, but it's at a different level. It's at different intensity, a different frequency, a different cadence. Like it's much more Tim doing the work than work Tim. Like it feels like now there were, I played a role of work Tim for ages. Do you know what I mean? Just because, I don't know, is that it, the weight of my own and other people's expectations, but this year has transformed that. And it just so happens, I still love my job and do the same work, right? I just do it slightly differently.
Is it because that's what you think society expected of you, Tim?
So I think it was the weight of my own expectation, which probably came from other people's, right? Which isn't, you know, it's not a deep, like I was all right. Everything was fine. Like I wasn't having any existential crisis or anything. I still love doing the work I do. I still believe the same stuff I believe, but the how I deliver it, right, and the why I deliver it and what context I deliver work in now is fundamentally different, right? I don't do anything before 10 a.m. now because I like to either go for a run or do yoga and have a good breakfast and read stuff because I'm good in the morning. So that's my time. So 6 till 10 is my time. And then I do a bunch of work and then I choose, because I'm not spending $3,500 on flipping petrol and trains and hotels and events a month, right? I can choose the work I do now, yeah. In theory, right? And I'm more fulfilled. I have a better direction, right? It's just that freedom to choose has become the thing that I feel wealthy and well about.
So that is really interesting because both of you, admittedly, you, Steve, had arrived at that conclusion kind of pre-pandemic, yeah. If you like.
Yeah.
But probably because of the pandemic, that enabled you perhaps to kind of pursue it more rigidly, if you like, and fulfill yourself. But it's really interesting that both of your legacies have ultimately been unbelievably positive, you know, which is interesting in itself.
Michael Owen, who was a guest on the second season of the podcast as well, he wrote something a few months back, and I saw it again yesterday, and I've actually just passed this advice on to somebody else today, which is, you're only here for 1,000 months. What do you want your legacy to be? And do you know what? It really resonates with me. It really resonates. Somebody couldn't make a meeting today that I was in because their daughter was in hospital and she apologised for it. And I said, what do you want your legacy to be? That you didn't look after your daughter and went to a meeting, or that you went to a meeting and didn't look after your daughter? It's really simple to me. It's really clear.
Yeah, I agree.
What about you then, Steve? What's your answer to that? Your own question.
I suppose what it has done, without question, is confirm that the way I approach work, in inverted commas, is the right one. I am very much, I'm going to enjoy this. Otherwise, I'm not going to do it, and I'm not going to do it well. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. There are days where that's easier than others. But fundamentally, I enjoy what I do. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. I genuinely wouldn't do it. I'd find something else to do. It's not about the money particularly. It enables a lifestyle. But I know that I could adjust. I can adjust. I'm far more comfortable with the person I am, and doing the things that I like doing, and being around and experiencing. And I suppose for me, the last 12 months has just confirmed that more than ever. I kind of felt pretty self-assured, if you like, around that and who I wanted to be and who I was. but it's confirmed that actually, you know, I quite like the life I've got. And going back to your points, really valid one, 1,000-month thing. I want to make sure that, you know, I max out on, you know, the good experiences, being around good people, having, you know, good times. I want to make sure I do as much of that as I possibly can for whatever of those 1,000 months I've got left.
You can't turn back time, can you, Steve?
No.
In last December, I turned 40, and I feel like I'm going through a midlife crisis in some stages. But it really did. I'm not saying it hit me like a ton of bricks, but it made me realise, oh, do you know what? I'm halfway through my working life now. What have I got to show for it? What am I proud of? What have I done where I could stand there and go, look at what I've done. There's not as much as I'd like. And actually, that's what I want to spend the second half of my career doing. I want to do things that I'm proud of, or I love doing, or I get up in the morning and I can't wait to get on with.
Yeah. And funnily enough, this very morning on another call, the fact that she thought she was maybe having a quarter life crisis, and I love that, but it's just the notion that she's at that point in her life, and I'm at another point in my life. But it's kind of at every point you should challenge how you feel about yourself, and just kind of align with what you want to be doing for the rest of your life.
Funny how the pandemic's also sped up time and made things into quarter life crises now.
Yeah. Not sure I knew what I wanted to do when I hit 40, if I'm honest. But anyway.
I know I love the marketing game. I do love it. But don't get me wrong, there's parts of marketing I really dislike as well. And we've talked about that multiple times. Yeah. But that whole strategy side of it is brilliant. And I do love it. I've just got to do more of it. It's as simple as that. Just got to sit back and do more of it.
Sit back and do more marketing strategy. What a good place to end the Noss episode. Steve Noss, thanks very much for spending some of your 1,000 months with us.
Yeah, well, you see, this feels like time well spent. I've loved it. Thank you.
That's very kind. We'll put all the links to Steve Noss and Cooper Parry in the show notes, because we've already got them, which is a lovely thing. But any final closing remarks from either of the Steves?
I suppose for me it would be one. Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it. It's good. It's good to talk around these subjects and air them. And I suppose for me, the wrap-up would be, I can't wait to do this face-to-face at some point, as soon as possible.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Every time, it doesn't matter what type of day you had, what type of week you had, I always come off these recordings and go, I'm energised again. And it's I feel exactly the same today. And it's been brilliant to have you back on, Steve. And I know we could talk about hundreds of different subjects with you. But it's also made me really ponder some things as well, personally. And I'm going to go away and do a lot more thinking around some of the things that have been said. And I might bring you up to that then on season 5 of the podcast to tell you what actually happened from it. But there's a couple of things that really hit quite deep. So, yeah, it's been great. It's been a lovely chat again.
It has. Well, folks... Thank you very much, and we'll see you in the next episode.